Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political center and have on the political left Shireen Gourbani.
Hello. Hey, listeners. We're so happy you're with us.
And on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, happy to be with you, and happy almost official Juneteenth.
Yeah, it's the week of Juneteenth. It's been a busy week. I spent the weekend in Seattle going to a World Cup game.
Now, we've talked about this a little bit before, but you were a soccer player.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you get to kick it around anymore or not really?
Just with my grandchild, sometimes with my kids. But yeah, played for 25 years, and I went to Seattle and watched.
I did not know that. 25 years.
Wow. Except for two pregnancies.
Oh, okay.
Three times a week.
Excellent.
For 25 years.
Well, good.
That's just how soccer rolls. But I got to see Belgium play Egypt in Seattle, and it was just extraordinary.
Yeah.
Loved every minute of it.
Yeah. What were some of the things you noticed?
The biggest thing is when people say that this is the biggest sporting event in the world, there is no question. When you bring together all these cultures in a single tournament, that's what's awesome. The international global feel of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be walking to an arena and the streets are just electric. And, you know, you see some Egyptian jerseys and some Belgium jerseys, but people just put on their jerseys. Tons of Mexico jerseys.
Yeah.
I was wearing a USA, you know, red, white, and blue, and lots of flags and just the beauty of sport to bring people together. A lot of the T-shirts in the fan shops were "We Are One," and they use the World Cup. If you know the trophy, it's like a
almost
number
like
one
a torch or something.
Yeah, it looks like a torch, but they use it
it's
as one.
Yeah. Well, I've been watching.
I watched Iran yesterday. They played New Zealand.
Yeah, that was great. And then I saw the one that I thought was that caught my attention was Cape Verde, which I had to look up in a 0-0 game with Spain.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah, super interesting. And that's what makes it fun is anybody can win on any day.
Interesting. And I haven't been watching the games or anything like that. Sorry, I'm not a soccer fan, mm-hmm. but I've been watching all these folks from around the world coming to the U.S., being introduced to our culture here, mm-hmm. and the lady that's freaking out about ranch dressing and
that's
how wonderful
right.
she wants it on everything, and some guy that went to a Bucky's gas station and just it blew his mind. And then somebody else that supposedly they drove for a couple hours across Texas and wanted to know if he was in California yet, and it's like, no, you're still in Texas. and the magnitude of this, and so it's just kind of fun for them to see things that we just take for granted. That to them are how big is this soda?
Yeah,
good commentary there, John. This World Cup has two host cities in Canada, has three in Mexico. I don't remember if it's five or six here in the United States, but they're in Vancouver, Seattle, L.A., Houston, Dallas, Boston, Atlanta. It's really special.
Yeah,
and what other thing I would just say, just to bring it into public affairs, politics, this program. I was really mindful, John, of Seattle. How did it show? And I think I told you I was going to Seattle, and you're like, be ready, because Seattle is known for a ruckus kind of population, a large unhoused population, and those sorts of things. And I just want to tell you, it showed extremely well.
Did it?
It did. They had all these hosts lining the streets. They were well branded. They were directing people around, holding signs to find the link line or their light rail line. And it made me proud to be an American. They represented our country very well.
That's awesome.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And I just
despite the heat. It's extra warm in the Pacific Northwest. I was in Portland area, and it was in the 90s.
And John, did you play a sport growing up?
Why, yes. Yes, I did.
What was it?
You don't want to take a guess?
Tennis.
No. Water polo and swim team.
Nice.
Oh, nice. Very good. How about you, Shireen?
Well, I did play soccer poorly, but mostly, no surprise to literally anyone, dance.
Oh, that's not a surprise.
There you go.
Do you remember the position you played in soccer, Shireen?
No, I just did whatever they told me to do, but I was often midfield.
The reason I ask is Shireen is a very good communicator, and you need great communicators on the back line. And in the central midfield.
Uh-huh. Yep, central midfield is where I was mostly.
Well, I speaking of water polo, I can remember, I think it was the 84 Olympics. There was a great commercial that I loved. And you didn't see it, but you heard horses jumping into the pool and the sound of horses when they were talking about water polo.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this U.S.-Iranian deal. And let's, you know, make the point that the Iranian national teams... And here, and their fans are here, that diaspora is showing up, and this deal's being, it was really interesting to see a World Cup happening while two countries are at war.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I had this moment last night.
Well, one being a host country.
Yeah. I was like, it's, I mean, we're not there, but like Miracle on Ice vibes. Right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It was very interesting.
Yeah.
It was interesting. And I have to say this proposal, I guess if we're calling it a deal, unfortunately, I hope by the time our listeners get to this episode that it's public and we understand what's in it. But it has not yet been made public. And the idea is that there's been an agreement.
And the fighting, at least for 60 days.
60 days, yeah.
Create a window for negotiations on other issues like the nuclear program of Iran, lifting of U.S. sanctions. And I understand that Iran's going to be able to charge a fee in the Strait of Hormuz.
Strait of Hormuz, which they're going to need because there's been extreme death and devastation in that country.
This is one of those questions. It's been no tolls. But then they're claiming they're going to charge a fee. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, what's the difference between a fee and a toll? It's the same thing. So
what's the saying? Clearly, it walked like a duck. It quacks like a duck.
Yeah. So we'll have to see on Friday when they sign this MOU, MOA, a memorandum of agreement. It's not the actual deal. It's a deal to sign, to negotiate a deal. And so we'll have to see what's actually in there versus my argument, like I made last week, is Iran, I think, just wants to stall, especially when it deals with nuclear materials and potentially nuclear weapons.
How do you think of this will affect the midterms? In other words,
I think Trump wants to make
a huge argument that this president created a really difficult challenge for his party by doing this and coming up with a solution that doesn't get you back to where you were before.
Well, I think he wants to expedite this thing and claim a deal and get it done so that it doesn't affect the midterms and potentially bodes well for the midterms. But my argument is, Iran, 47 years of history, wants to drag it out. So
I know
I'm not as positive about that.
Mm-hmm. I know you always say this, 47 years of history. I just want to take a moment to just remind people what you're referring to is the Iranian Revolution, which occurred because in 1953, we overthrew their government because their government decided to nationalize oil. Okay. Mm-hmm. We put in power somebody that was
the Shah.
Well, yes, who was then overthrown by this regime. So this, I mean, I know that it's like convenient to say 47 years ago, but we've been messing around in Iran a lot longer than that.
Yeah, hey, can I just make, but I hate to keep bringing everything to soccer, but in the World Cup, you know, they're trying to call countries by the names they want to be called. And you saw what they call Iran. Did you see this?
No.
It's IR. Yeah. Iran, and it's the Islamic Republic of Iran.
So those,
and it's interesting to me because you know they're making really clear their organization is under a religious basis.
Yes. So, and I think these are the things to look for in the MOU or whatever we're calling it. Does it address proxies? Or, you know, is there still the support for Hezbollah that we've seen out of this regime?
Yeah.
Is there a regime change? No, there is not. We have actually a harder line government in place. There's not going to be a way to address that in that. I think the two other big things you mentioned, the nuclear program, what is going to be negotiated there? I can't imagine it's going to be better than the JCPOA. And that took years. This will take years. And then the last one is the ballistic missiles, which, frankly, there's been quite a bit of reporting to suggest that what Hegseth said in terms of disabling that is nowhere near what has happened. And they still have quite a bit of ballistic missile power. So I think all of those are things that we should be looking for in this agreement.
And tied to the proxies, I think you're also alluding to what is Israel's role in this whole thing?
No kidding.
Where do they stand down versus not? And we see some friction between President Trump and Netanyahu on this.
I hate to make this program have too much sports in it, but you know, you had the Knicks win the NBA, and then we've had the World Cup, but we also have the
Where's baseball?
You have the Ultimate Fighting Championship event at the White House. It was the president's 80th birthday.
Uh-huh.
What'd they have?
I can see you guys are clearly UFC fans.
Yes, seven martial art fights. I watched some of the highlights. I'm horrified at watching these people just hurt each other.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a fighting fan. I mean, that's not a thing that a lot of women
care about. You're a lover,
not
a fighter?
Yeah, I'm not. I've never understood it.
Yeah.
Do you understand boxing at all?
I mean, a little bit. But even that, I mean, I think of all the brain injury and things that,
Right.
I don't know, but this using our national symbols, the White House, the Lincoln Memorial, to construct a 600-ton metal structure known as the Claw.
Yeah.
I thought it was off-putting for me.
So maybe this is the North Dakota in me, but I kind of thought it was, it like looked awesome. I think the thing that is upsetting to me was seeing just like very clearly, first of all, it's behind a paywall. So you had to have Paramount Plus to see it. It was supposed to be our celebration, I thought, but most people couldn't see it. Then we have extensive branding and payment from cryptocurrency and Saudis, right? Like, so that's who's paying for a lot of this. So that's the branding all over it. And then for me, if this is a White House that's also celebrating arts and culture and not canceling seasons at the Kennedy Center, right?
Yeah.
I'm good with all of it, actually. I thought it looked rad.
I think it's so great, Shereen, because we're different here. But the cryptocurrency stable coins are what? Issued by the Trump family business, World Liberty Financial. That doesn't feel right.
It's the grift. And I don't like that. Like, I don't like any of that. But I think
if you looked at the colors and the lights and the jets flying over.
And that's cool. And I think, I want a White House that embraces all parts of American culture. And that this was not that. And in fact, it was a very slimmed down version of even the UFC. People who got up and said deeply offensive and truly insane things. And the president just kind of glowered and sat there.
Well, the interesting thing for me is I was in Portland this weekend. And so it was Monday morning. I'm sitting there waiting for my takeout breakfast. And the guy that was there next to me, he was also waiting. And he brought up, he asked about if I saw the fight. And I told him I hadn't. And he goes, yeah, I don't usually watch that. But I watched it. It was really cool. And, you know, here it is, liberal Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy, you never know.
This was the
liberal Shereen.
He was
interested
to discuss. So it reached out to more than just, you know, who you might think of the UFC
I'm okay
crowd.
Doing it at Disneyland. I'm okay doing it in, you know, Madison Square Garden or something. I don't like doing it.
I accept that.
On holy ground.
Yeah.
If
it were a soccer match, what would you think?
Might be a little bit more flexible. I'm teasing. Let's take a short break and we'll be right back. Natalie Gochner with Shereen Gourbani and John Dougal. Stay tuned, everyone.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shereen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Before we jump to local news, can we just talk for a minute about Elon Musk becoming a trillionaire?
Yeah.
That was such a...
To what extent do we care? I mean, clearly some people are wound up about this. There's a big part of it. I don't really care. Congratulations.
I'm trying to figure out what skill he has that has made him so extraordinarily successful in monetary terms. What is his big skill set, John?
Well, part of it is some people would say that he's visionary in terms of where he was going, you know, with reusable rockets going into space, with a massive network of satellites driving the internet, with electric vehicles and so forth. He's just an entrepreneur's entrepreneur is what a lot of people would say.
That's probably true. I wonder, especially in his building years, how much he slept at night. A lot of
folks say he really didn't sleep at night.
Yeah. A lot of geniuses, so to speak, you know, have few sleeping hours.
Yeah.
Because their mind is so active.
Well, I mean, there's quite a bit of critique also about some would say he's been engaged in a bit of a grift as well, especially around Tesla. There was quite a bit of reporting. I would just say something that occurs to me is the screwworm outbreak that is now happening in Texas. So this is a person who's now become a trillionaire on the back of our data, our information, exclusive access to our government, who absolutely shredded our, for example, USAID for many institutions that were in place to protect the American people. And now what a program that I think costs $15 million a year to monitor screwworm, slashed by Elon, slashed by Doge, we're now going to spend $1 billion trying to get that under control. Yeah. So in some ways, sure. But in other ways, like when it came to our government, it's the costs are just starting to rack up.
Interesting. Keep an eye.
I think those are two very unrelated things. This is a key thing. You know, Henry Ford did incredible things when it came to auto and auto manufacturing. Despite some of the distasteful personal feelings that he had about race and so forth, religion.
Hey, let's go to the Scott Matheson Courthouse. Always correct me if I'm wrong here, but we have a Supreme Court in Utah that's growing from 5 justices to 7. Their offices are in the Matheson Courthouse, correct?
Yep. And down on State Street.
Yeah, right across from City Hall between 4th and 5th.
4th and 5th, yeah, that's right.
And
there's not enough chairs.
Yeah, well, and it's you know, when you think of adding two more justices, you've got to have two more offices for them. You've got to have the staff for them. You've got to have the bench layout.
The bench they're at.
Yeah. And what's the cost here?
$1.7 million.
But you don't think, you don't always think of these things when you think of it expanding the court. And I'm all for investing in our government and rule of law and all those kinds of things. But it's going to be interesting. They have a fixed footprint. Somebody's going to be losing space as you do this.
They've got to shuffle things around to make room for that. And then you also have to think about how much time it takes. So construction will go, my understanding, until September sometime.
And then we have the new justice that's going through his confirmation hearings.
One of the new nominated.
Jorgensen, which our notes here say J.T. Jorgensen, which tells you he's a member of the LDS faith because the LDS faith likes to do the middle initial.
Okay.
I don't know. That's something I
never do my middle
initial. I'm a member
initial.
Of the faith.
I don't even do it when I was auditor. So.
He's a senior counsel for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He served a 3-year mission where he was a president. Does this sound right, John? So he was away for 3 years.
Yeah, mission president.
And some people are saying that he, didn't meet the residency requirement to be on the Supreme Court, which I think is crazy because I don't think of mission presidents
temporary voluntary service to change
their residency.
You keep your residency where you're from because that's your intent to return to.
Yeah.
Well, I think the residency issues should be pretty clear. And if you maintain an address and voting, this should be clear, which suggests to me that there is some mud in the water. It feels like it should be easy to explain.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Let's go to these congressional battles and Carrie Ann Lisenby, who's now has this dust up with Blake Moore over insider trading, a deleted expo. How do you read this, John?
Well, here's my key thing. I think most people don't understand. My concern is not insider trading in Congress. My concern is the fact that congressmen and women can manipulate the market. So it's not insider trading that's the concern. It's that they can take positions in companies and then move the market to benefit themselves.
Right.
And that's the bigger concern from my perspective.
I do not understand this issue well, but it would make total sense to me if we don't do this, that everybody in elected office, in Congress, would have blind trust for their investments, that they don't have a say on where their money goes.
Yeah. The insider trading allegation is somehow they have confidential information that others don't have and that they invested based on that. But I think it's clear to say there are various folks in Congress that seem to have benefited financially somehow from their position
somehow
in Congress, in
you
the market.
Forget.
However that happened,
you
that
how
was
this
abnormal from what the average person could do.
When I was at EPA, when they would meet to do CAFE standards, fuel efficiency standards, just the science of it and whatnot, they would block the hallways where those were being discussed from media, certainly, but also from employees because it moves the market.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Washington has amazing power.
Yes, it sure does. And very lax rules that I think contribute to the everyday Utahns feeling of basically, certain people having access to information and being able to profit off of that. There's a pretty long history of that.
Shereen, let's go to Utah County, where we've got a conservative influencer who's raised some news because of a hire that was made. This is Utah County Clerk Aaron Davidson, who hosted a town hall, was wanting to inspire new ideas to get young Utahns to the ballot. And instead got a big protest. Is that right?
It sounds like it. About 20 people attended the event, which I have to say might be quite a lot for a county clerk to encounter. But really, the protest is around the hiring of an individual named Kai Schwemmer. Apparently, Kai is a BYU student and self-described true conservative. Unfortunately, has a history of posting anti-Semitic and white supremacist content on his social media accounts and has said that has questioned if it makes sense for women to vote.
Yeah.
So this is your county.
What do you guys think about that? this is my county.
Yeah, what do you think?
I am not voting for Davidson. I don't think he's done a very good job as county clerk, just to be clear. This is just another example. He's hiring somebody with absolutely no experience, putting him in a position as deputy, which says to me, you really can't run this office.
Yeah.
And I've seen enough incidents over the years. And so this is just par for the course for me, which is unfortunate. We've had too many problems in the county clerk position.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to our Senate president, President Adams. There's a conservative group. It's multi-state. It's called Make Liberty Win. But they've been, you know, leading a nationwide super PAC that's taking on our Senate president.
Yeah.
This same group has, you know, worked to oust legislative leaders in surrounding states. I don't like it when this outside money comes in this kind of way and targets somebody who's done a lot of good for our state.
Well, I think we can agree on the dark money is bad.
I've never heard of this group before.
Make yeah. Liberty Win.
Well, I mean, if you
have investing $100,000.
Yes. Yeah. So this is, I mean, especially in these Senate races, that's mm-hmm. real money. You know, we're talking mm-hmm. about really, honestly, not to be cruel, but like a few thousand voters mm-hmm. in these primaries. But this is, I do think it's an interesting, to me, when I see a group like that get involved, what I see is the perception of weakness. It looks like an opportunity. So who knows what will happen, but there are.
This late in the right.
What do you think they're trying to get out of this, John? Like, they're bringing in this outside money. They've decided that President Adams, who is a conservative Republican, who's, you know, led
ALEC and some other conservative groups over the many years.
What are they after? What's their point?
I've never heard of the group. I don't know what they're after. I don't know what their issue is. So, but clearly, you know, they're coming in late in the game.
Yeah, and there are,
you know, 100,000 is not a lot of money, but to a certain extent, it's sizable.
Yeah.
But in a Senate primary in Utah, you know, I anticipate, you know, President Adams will be spending, you know, a couple $100,000 on his race.
Yeah.
But clearly, I think they're seeing some type of opportunity or weakness that they can take advantage of. But what is their end game? I do not know.
Yeah. Interesting. And have you taken the Pew Research Center survey on your political ideology?
Yes, I have.
You haven't done this, John.
Not the
Pew
one.
We need to send it to you. My family's been sending
around.
I've done
the one that shows me basically as pretty hardcore conservative libertarian Republican.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I only bring it up because we should put it on our, you know, link
in the show notes. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's they you ask in the one that I'm familiar with, you answer maybe 12 questions, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're you can tell they're getting at you. You know, I mean, they're asking you how you feel about open carry. And then a minute later, they're asking you about, do you think that black people are still, you know, influenced by the original sin in this country and slavery and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really good. And I'm wondering, Shereen, do you remember what your orientation
was?
Well,
as
I'm
you can imagine,
here.
Quite left. I can't remember a bit. But the thing is, that if I'm not mistaken, they basically say there are sort of nine, is that right? Nine different really political orientations.
If you fit on our scale, you'd be hard left, but you're too far left.
I do fit on the scale, but I just thought that it was interesting, and I do think that it's a much better representation of really where people's politics fall. That two parties is certainly not enough. I feel like it's not enough for the three of us sitting here, especially as there have been many changes in your party, in the Republican Party, and people feeling less at home there. But I feel that way in my own party, too. You know,
The one that I'm referring to is the Political Typology 2026. I was identified as pragmatic and polite right. I thought they got it about right.
Wow, there you go.
Oh, it's so funny. I wish I could remember mine.
I had one of my kids was a loyal liberal, though.
Yeah.
So kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what else do you guys want to talk about? You want to talk about primary ballots? What do you want to talk about?
I actually just want to give an acknowledgement to a lot of reporting around restaurants that are closing around the city. And I know that it extends beyond just Salt Lake. But really the increased costs that people are feeling because of, I think, a lot of the policies of this administration, the way that our downtown is changing, too, and the way that people are sort of spending their money has, which, again, I think is largely driven by this administration, has really put a hard hit on some local restaurants.
So you have Market Street Grill.
Downtown is
closing their doors, and it's been an institution since 1980.
Yeah,
it has.
My husband worked there for 7 years.
The quality just went down, unfortunately.
But it's not even that.
I agree.
Like, Yoko Ramen is a small business. They're closing. Like, there are just many that more and more that are popping up. And I think when, you know, we think about people's voting behaviors, I don't know that we always think about what happens when these small businesses close.
To put a note or a data point to it, Shereen, the consumer price index over the last year increased 4.2%. 4.2.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Now, that includes what's happening with oil. If you pull energy and food out, it's different. But to your point, we want to have the true cost that everyone's feeling in there.
Right before we end, I want to just flag, we're coming up on Independence Day.
Yeah.
Folks need to get out, study their history, think about 250 years, where we've come from, where we're going. I read a book
recently. Our founding documents, what they mean.
Documents. I've got a good friend, Dr. Greg Jackson, who just published a book, Been There, Done That. Talks
BYU
about
professor.
Things, UVU professor.
UVU
talks
professor.
About what we've survived over, you know, the first 100 years of our existence as a country and lessons that we can learn from that. So
yeah, very well, good.
We can dive deeper into that in the upcoming episode.
Yeah, we'll do it. And I won't be the first person to confuse BYU and UVU, would I?
No, sometimes we call it BYU Orem.
Very good. Hey, well, great conversation. I'm glad to share so much sports and public affairs with everybody. John Dugal, Shereen Gorbani, and Natalie Gochner. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we also want to thank Anthony Scoma, our producer. Have a great week.